Welcome to Guide to the Cosmos on WebTalkRadio.net with your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni, physicist, public speaker, and author of Everyone's Guide to Atoms, Einstein, and the Universe, and his new second book, Can Life Be Merely an Accident? With Robert as our guide to the cosmos, we will explore the frontiers of science and participate in the exciting discoveries of physics, astronomy, and cosmology. Now, providing public access to science, here's your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni.
Thank you for joining us. Today we will explore the question, will the world end in 2012, according to the Mayan prophecy? Posted on my website are several images that I think you're going to want to look at while you're listening to today's show. So while you keep open the window that's accessing the audio track, open another window and click on guidetothecosmos.com. That's guidetothecosmos.com. On the home page, click on the microphone icon for a menu of radio shows and select today's show, Will the World End in 2012? Each week we begin by answering a listener's question. And usually that'll be a short feature, but this week we're devoting our entire show to answering this listener's question. So with us today is Joan of Westlake. Hello, Joan, how are you?
Hi, Dr. Piccioni, I'm just fine.
Well, Joan, what is your question?
Well, I have a lot of friends who are very concerned about this 2012 business, and there is even a new movie coming out by Sony called 2012. So there are a lot of very nervous people out here who want to know what is going to happen in 2012, if anything. Can you answer their question?
Well, 2012 is related to a prophecy of the Mayans. They were great astronomers, and they had a calendar which was based on their astronomical observations, and that calendar ran to the end on December 20th of 2012, and that was the last day on their calendar. So they thought that the next day, December 21st of 2012, would be the end of time itself. They made no provision for their calendar to go on beyond that date.
Dr. Piccioni, did the Mayans have a calendar similar to ours, or was theirs a whole different system?
Well, the Mayans did have a different system for keeping track of time than we did, but they did have some very definite similarities to our system. They knew, for instance, that the Earth had the same year, the same 365 days in its orbit around the Sun. In any case, they started their calendar on day one, is August 11th of the year 3114 BC.
Did they actually live at that time?
I don't think so. I think that was before their time, but somehow they figured that that was the right date to start their calendar. All of these factors in the Mayan system were based on astronomy, on their observations of the heavens.
How did they do their observations? They didn't have telescopes, did they?
No, they didn't have any telescope. So what they did was they just observed the heavens with their eyes. And they did construct certain instruments that allowed them to make more precise measurements. They built their observatories in certain ways so that light from the sun or light from a star would cast a shadow on certain dates, and they would carefully measure the length of those shadows and see how those distances changed as the years went by. So they were very clever, and they were able to determine many things about the heavens. They were particularly fascinated with the motion of Venus, and they were able to calculate with good precision how long it took the Earth and Venus and the Sun to come back into alignment after the planets rotated around the Sun, and that turns out to be 584 days. And then they made measurements about how long it took Venus and the Earth to come back into the same alignment with respect to the distant stars, which is 2,922 days. So they did a pretty good job of estimating these things. And on the Mayan calendar, today's date is the ninth kin of the 13th unal of the 15th tune of the 19th Kaktun of the 20th, of the 12th Baktun.
I don't think anybody's going to correct you, Robert.
Well, I do have a computer program set up that allows me to calculate that. So I'm relatively confident that that's the correct date. It's 12, 19, 15, 13, 9. And the thing is that this is the 12th Kaktun. And it's getting toward the end of the 12th Kaktun. And the Mayans didn't think there would ever be a 13th Kaktun. So we're getting close to the end of this period. Now, the Mayans studied the motions of the heavens, and one of the things that was particularly fascinating to them was the Milky Way galaxy.
Now, that's our galaxy, right?
Yeah, that's our galaxy. And it has hundreds of billions of stars, of which the sun is one. And they called the Milky Way the world tree. And they thought that the world tree was the origin of life itself. And the position of the Milky Way in the sky, to them, had different significances in its different positions, and it had to do with the what was going to happen here on Earth. So their observations of the heavens were an integral part of their political system and of their religion.
Now, how do we know so much about the Mayans? Did they have a written language?
I think they were the only American civilization that did have a written language. And they wrote books and they inscribed their writings on their stone buildings. Unfortunately, almost all of their books were destroyed when the Spanish invaded the Americas. And I think there are only three Mayan books that remain in existence today. One of the great Mayan structures that you can see on our website is an image of the Great Pyramid at Chichen Itzan. This is image number one on the website. And this is, in a sense, an astronomical structure. They built this pyramid with 365 steps. That's the number of days in the year, of course. And in the second image, you see a picture of the observatory at the same complex. And various windows in this observatory allow the sun to cast shadows at various positions during the key events of the year. And at the spring and autumn equinox, the sun shines directly up the staircase of the Great Pyramid. So they had laid all these structures out with careful observations of the heavens in mind. And with these, they were even able to predict eclipses, which is quite remarkable. Many other societies considered eclipses to be some great tragic event, and they were frightened by these things, but the Mayans understood the cycle of eclipses, and so it was something that they looked forward to. Anyway, so their calendar runs out at a specific date, December 21st of 2012, and that date corresponds to an alignment of certain things in the heavens that they thought would be a particularly important event and must have cosmic significance. Their interpretation was that this was going to be the end of the world, but the alignment is the alignment of the center of the Milky Way galaxy with the center of the plane of the solar system and of the rising sun on the winter solstice. So what all this means is if you look at a picture of the Milky Way galaxy, which is image number three on the website, you see that this reconstructed image by NASA and Caltech shows what our galaxy would look like if you were able to view it from very, very far away. Of course, we can't do that. We're in the middle of the galaxy at the end of that yellow arrow that's shown in the image. So the galaxy is rather large but thin. It's about only 10% as thick as it is wide. So when we look at it in the sky, it looks more or less like a line. There is a center point to the galaxy, and the Mayans were able to determine what that center plane of the Milky Way galaxy was. And then there's also a center plane of the solar system. And they were able to determine that, as we can today, by looking at the path of the planets across the sky, because all the planets in our solar system orbit in a plane that's very close to being a common plane, which is called the ecliptic. So there's one line in the sky corresponding to the ecliptic plane, and there's a second line corresponding to the center plane of the Milky Way galaxy, and these two lines move slowly relative to each other as the Earth rotates around the Sun and as the axis of the Earth slowly precesses. So there's a 24,000-year precession rate of the Earth's axis, and the whole solar system rotates about the Milky Way about every 200 million years. So there are a number of various motions that occur, and they were able to predict that on December 21st of 2012, when the Sun rose at winter solstice, the Sun would be right at the intersection of these two lines, the ecliptic and the plane of the galaxy, which is image number three, image number four, posted on the website.
Dr. Piccioni, can you tell me, was their prediction correct? Is this going to happen in 2012?
Well, actually, it's a little bit off. They didn't have telescopes and fine instruments that we do today, and that alignment was the closest to perfection in the year 1997. So actually, we're moving away from a precise alignment nowadays. And as I recall, 1997 was not such a bad year. Certainly no disaster occurred to the planet. So number one, their prediction was a little bit off in terms of time. And number two, the expected disaster that may have occurred actually didn't happen at all.
Why did they think this was going to be the end of the world when these two things aligned?
It wasn't for any good physical reason, but just a belief, I guess you could say, that an event of this cosmic significance must have had great meaning to life on Earth. And they interpreted that as being the end of time itself. Sort of a pessimistic guess,
yes.
I would say. You are listening to Guide to the Cosmos on webtalkradio.net. I am your host, Robert Piccioni, and we're talking today about will the world end in 2012, according to the Mayan prediction. We're talking with Joan of Westlake.
Now, this new movie that's coming out, I don't want to dwell on it, but what I found interesting is that the film is going to focus on the destructive floods that will occur in 2012. What would cause a flood on Earth? I mean, what is there in outer space that would affect us like that, that would cause a flood on Earth?
Well, actually, there is nothing in outer space that really could cause a flood on Earth. And that brings up an interesting question. Certainly, astrologers have for centuries talked about the influence of things like the position of the planet Jupiter or Mars rising in the seventh house or whatever they talk about.
Isn't that from the musical Hair, Jupiter aligning with Mars?
Well, that was probably one of the best applications of astrology was the musical Hair. But in terms of actual physical prediction, the position of the planets in the sky really can have no influence on events on Earth, simply because there's no physical mechanism to do that. Now, the position of the Earth relative to the Sun, that is very important. As the Earth goes around the Sun, we get different amounts of sunlight on different places of the Earth, and that's responsible for our changing seasons, which does have a dramatic effect, particularly on agriculture. And the Moon orbits the Earth, and it causes the tides that we have on Earth. And perhaps more importantly, it stabilizes the rotation axis of the Earth. So the Moon has had a very important effect on the Earth. But everything else in the cosmos really is so much further away that even though some of these objects are very massive, they're really simply too far away to have any dramatic impact at all on anything that happens on our planet. For example, if you compute the effect of gravity from the various objects in the sky on Earth and compare that to Earth's gravity, you would find, as it's shown in image number 5 on the website, that the sun's influence is about 0.5 of 1/1000th of that of the Earth itself. And the sun is always in the sky, so that 0.5 of 1/1000th really doesn't change from time to time. It varies a little bit as the Earth rotates around the sun, but very little indeed. The effect of the moon's gravity is only about 3 parts in a million. That's large enough to cause the waters to move in the oceans, but that's still a small effect. The effect of all of the other planets put together only amounts to about 1/25th of 1/1000000th of the effect of Earth's own gravity. So that's really next to nothing, particularly since the Earth's own gravity varies by about 0.5% from one place on the surface of the Earth to another.
Dr. Piccioni, does that mean that the farther away you are from the Earth, the less the effect of gravity has?
Yes, exactly. I mean, that's why these distant planets don't affect us very much, or even the Milky Way itself, because the force of gravity decreases as the square of the distance. So if something is twice as far away, its impact in terms of gravity is only 1/4 as large as the nearer object. And the nearest star to the Earth is 30 million times as far away as the diameter of the sun. So, and it's 250,000 times further from Earth than the sun itself is. So 250,000 squared is a very big number. It's about 1/4 of a trillion. So, and that's the nearest star. The Milky Way galaxy is vastly further from us in terms of its center of gravity. So all of the stars of the Milky Way galaxy, even though there are hundreds of billions of them, only amount to about 20 trillionths of the gravity that Earth exerts on its surface itself.
What causes the difference in gravity on Earth itself? You were talking about there's different places that could, the difference could be like 0.5%.
Yeah. If the Earth was a perfect sphere, then it would have the same gravity everywhere on its surface. But there are some differences. The Earth is rotating, and so it tends to bulge at the center. So if you're standing on the equator, you're further from the center of the Earth than you are if you're standing on the North Pole. If you're standing on the top of Mount Everest, you're also further from the center, so the gravity is a little less. And if you're swimming in the Dead Sea, which is about 1,000 feet below sea level, then the gravity would be a little more because you'd be closer to the center of the Earth. Of course, if you're on the Dead Sea, you float pretty well, so you might not notice that there's much gravity. The Dead Sea has so much salt in it that anybody could float. So that if you go from place to place in different locations on Earth's surface, then you see these variations. And if they're very dense deposits of certain elements in below the surface, then you can also have a variation in the gravity of the Earth.
Does the gravity depend on, if you have a celestial body, does the gravity not only depend on the distance from Earth, but does it also depend on how large that body is? The larger the body, the more the gravitational pull?
Yeah, certainly. The force of gravity is directly proportional to the mass. So if you have a body with twice as much mass, it would exert twice the gravity. So one might certainly think that with 100 billion stars or more in the Milky Way galaxy, that it would exert an immense amount of gravity. And it does. It exerts enough gravity to cause the sun to be in orbit around the center of the Milky Way. But it exerts such a very small force on Earth, much, much smaller than the effect of Earth's own gravity, much, much smaller than the effect of our sun, much, much smaller than the effect of the moon, just because the distance is squared, and that distance really is enormous. So it's hard to imagine, in fact, it's really physically impossible to come up with a mechanism by which the motion of something as distant as the Milky Way, or even something as distant as Jupiter, could have a major impact on our planet.
So it sounds like we really don't have anything to worry about in 2012. But does the Earth have anything else that we have to worry about?
Oh, certainly, certainly there are much more serious problems facing us than the position of the planets. One of the things that we might worry about is asteroids. After all, we've identified 30,000 asteroids in the solar system that have orbits that could potentially cross Earth's orbit. So these are asteroids that could impact the Earth, and these are asteroids that are large enough that if they did, they could wipe out our entire civilization and most of the living creatures on the planet.
Isn't that what wiped out the dinosaurs?
Yeah, it's believed that an asteroid impacted the Earth about 65 million years ago and destroyed almost all the living things on Earth and wiped out about a third of all the species, caused a third of all the species to become completely extinct, including the dinosaurs. And that's just one of these 30,000 asteroids that's out there. So these things do hit the planet periodically. There are more small ones than big ones, but still, there are at least 30,000 that are of lethal proportion.
Are we going to have any warning when they come, if one comes towards us?
That's a definite maybe.
Oh, good.
There was an asteroid that approached the Earth last year, and I think we had something like 2 days of warning. Fortunately, it missed us, but astronomers didn't know it was coming until almost the last moment. It was one of those things that hadn't been seen before. So NASA has a program to identify asteroids, and they've been searching the skies for asteroids for a number of years, but there certainly are a lot of asteroids they believe that they haven't seen yet.
Well, okay, let's say they identify one. Do they have any way of dealing with it?
Well, we don't have a way of dealing with it quite yet. We have some promising ideas, and we're going to have to make some reasonable investments to make those ideas viable. If you had about a 10-year warning, or hopefully even more than that, there are some schemes that you would be able to launch a rocket out to meet one of these asteroids and gently push it off course over a period of time. There are several promising suggestions as to how that could be done, but until we actually go out and try one, it's a bit of a guess as to whether or not that's really going to work.
So we don't want to just destroy it, rather than we just want to push it off course?
Well, you might try the technique of hitting it with a giant nuclear weapon and trying to blow it into pieces, but people have turned away from that alternative to some extent because some of these asteroids are really piles of rubble. And if you just sort of separate the rubble into smaller pieces, all those pieces are still going to hit the planet and more or less at the same time. And it may not make much difference whether it's all one piece or millions of smaller pieces if they all hit at the same time.
Well, how large are these asteroids compared to the size of the Earth?
Well, they're not very large compared to the size of the Earth. They might be only a mile across. They might be 5 miles across. But even an asteroid that's a mile or two across could devastate the entire planet. So
actually, a mile sounds pretty big.
Well, yes, it does. And they're moving in excess of 25,000 miles per hour. So faster than a speeding bullet, which is what makes them so devastating.
25,000 miles an hour?
Yeah, that would be the minimum speed. That's the escape velocity of the Earth. So an object from outer space that wasn't moving very much, which happened to fall into our gravity and would be accelerated by the Earth's gravity and hit the surface, would be moving at 25,000 miles an hour. If the object was originally moving faster, then that velocity would add on to the top of the 25,000 miles an hour. So these things are devastating because of the speed in which they're coming in. Now, the Earth is constantly being bombarded by objects from outer space, but most of them are very small, and the vast majority of them burn up in the atmosphere.
Could an asteroid coming that fast actually knock us off our course around the sun, or just destroy the surface?
probably would just destroy the surface. It doesn't have as much momentum as would be necessary to change the orbit of the Earth, but if it melts the surface of the planet, I'm not sure we would care.
No, I'm not sure either. I was thinking, thank goodness for small things, but that's not such a small thing.
No. Okay, well, it's been fun talking about the Mayans.
Oh, let me ask one last question. Well, maybe not the last one. What actually happened to the Mayans? Do they still exist?
Well, Mayan people still exist. They were conquered by the Spanish after long and bitter wars. So their culture was destroyed, and most of their written writing was destroyed. But Mayan peoples still exist. They are in Central America, Mexico, Guatemala, Belize, El Salvador, and in Honduras. And there are still people that speak various Mayan dialects, and I'm sure they consider themselves proudly to be Mayans.
Well, that's good to know that they weren't all wiped out like the Incas and the Aztecs.
Well, it's been great talking about the Mayans today, and I just want to conclude by letting everybody know that you're still going to be okay on December 22nd of 2012. You'll still have to pay your rent and your taxes.
That means you can go watch the movie 2012 and not have to worry about it. You can just enjoy the floods that are going to show you on the screen.
Right. Enjoy the special effects and have a good time. And thank you for joining us today. Next week, we're going to have a guest, an astronomer from California State University at Channel Islands. His name is Jerry Clifford. And I want to close by thank you for joining us. And remember, you are never too young or too old to wonder why.
Don't forget to explore Robert's website, guidetothecosmos.com, and check out the spectacular discounts on his books that are available to you, our radio audience. Send us your questions, comments, and suggestions for future show topics. That's guidetothecosmos.com. Goodbye.